the Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
Today, we're going to be talking about the situation that we have for a lot of our clients, and that's where much of the retirement planning that someone winds up doing is kind of that simple version of putting money into a 401k. And the effects of the money going into the 401k, there's some unintended consequences of doing that and how we wind up handling that as advisors and some strategies that you might employ there. And a lot of today's conversation is going to be about tax diversification. So it's the, you know, maybe I have some money in a taxable bucket, maybe I have all this money in a tax deferred bucket, and what kind of effects is that going to have on me? And how do I get money into a tax-free bucket? So today I'll be joined by Crystal Colbert, who's going to give us a lot of these strategies to help us employ. Some of them may be something that you want to have more conversation about. So welcome, Crystal.
Hi. Yes. Thank you, Aaron. So I wanted to focus this podcast on things that people don't necessarily take into account for because it's far down the line or just doesn't primarily affect them yet. So I wanted to go over how being in a higher marginal tax rate affects Social Security and your Medicare premium. So strategies to implement over time, whether you're in your early years of working versus pre-retirement, in retirement, that sort of thing.
Okay. So I guess educate me a little bit then and the audience in general. How do tax rates affect Social Security and Medicare?
Yes. So I think the higher your marginal tax rate, the higher your Medicare premiums are going to be, and the more your Social Security is going to be taxed. So a lot of people don't think of where is your income going to be coming from in retirement, right? A lot of people build their tax deferred buckets primarily. So that's all taxed as ordinary income when you're pulling funds from, you know, your traditional 401k or your IRA that you've built up over time. Social Security, up to 85% of your Social Security can be taxed depending on what your income is for the year. And then the biggest one is your premiums for Medicare, depending on how high your tax bracket is or how much income you're pulling in, that will be based off of what your premium for Medicare is going to be. So one of the things that they talk about is income-related monthly adjustment amounts, IRMA, when it comes to Medicare premiums. So if you are making over $194,000 married filing jointly, you're going to have additional Medicare premiums on top of whatever your Part B premium is. So people don't necessarily take that into account. So the more tax diversified you can be, or the lower your tax bracket is, or the income that you have coming in, the less of your Social Security is going to be taxed and less of a Medicare premium that you're going to be facing in the future.
Gotcha. So that's probably something that most people don't actually take into consideration. I shouldn't say most people, but it winds up being that surprising thing that I don't think people were expecting. Would that be kind of correct?
Right. Exactly. It just hits them once they have to start taking their Social Security or, you know, once they start Medicare.
So what are, I mean, as far as mitigating that situation, whether it be the taxable Social Security, now the taxable Social Security, that's a fairly low amount as far as like how much income that you can wind up taking there. So, you know, before your Social Security is actually taxed, any idea how much that winds up being?
Yeah, it's very low and they have not changed it in a very long time. So based off of the provisional income that you have coming in for Social Security, 50% of your Social Security will be taxed if you are married filing jointly and you have income between $32,000 and $44,000. So it's really quite a low number. And then 85% if you're anywhere above $44,000 in income coming in. So it's really hard to kind of mitigate when it comes to Social Security, unless you have a very significant tax-free bucket that you've built up over the years, or you have, you know, a lot of your income coming in is maybe from a taxable account. You don't have a very large tax-deferred IRA, 401k, pension, that sort of thing. That's the only thing that you could really do ahead of time to prevent having large amounts of your tax or your Social Security being taxed.
Gotcha. So now, I mean, what are some ways that you could kind of mitigate some of that when you talk about, you know, whether it be the whole tax diversification, like how do you wind up getting more money into that tax-free bucket if I do have that 401k or, you know, I'm just trying to prepare, I guess, in the future?
Yeah. So especially if you're early on in your working career, or, you know, you have a fair amount of time before retirement, a couple things that you can do to kind of build that tax-free bucket that's going to be key is, one, if you're underneath the 24% tax bracket, I recommend contributing to a Roth 401k, right? Because we know tax laws are going to sunset in 2026. So if we can pay at the 24% tax bracket, it makes a lot of sense to be contributing to a Roth 401k. However, if you're over the 24% tax bracket, then I would consult with a financial advisor or financial planner, just because a lot of the times when, you know, come retirement, a lot of the times you'll actually be in a lot lower of a tax bracket. So it doesn't make as much sense, but it's a pretty safe assumption if you're at the 24% tax bracket or lower to just build up that Roth 401k, to build up that tax-free bucket in the beginning of your working career. There's no income limitation when it comes to contributing to a Roth 401k, so that's going to be key. The other thing you can do if you do fall below the income limitations for contributing directly to a Roth IRA, you could start building up your Roth IRA over the years. Obviously, that does come with limitations because you can only contribute up to 7,000.
In 2023, it went from 6,000 to 6,500, and those who are 50 and older, it goes from 7,000 to 7,500. And I guess, you know, before we even like get too far, let's bring it back to like the basics on this, right? So when you talk about the tax deferred versus the Roth, like what in like the simplest form, what does that actually mean? Like what's the decision that I'm trying to make here?
Right. So the key decision is, do I want to pay taxes now? So if we're in a lower tax bracket, right, it makes a lot more sense to pay the taxes now than, say, later on down the line when you're in a higher tax bracket, maybe you're making a lot more income further down in your career, then paying the taxes later when you think you might be in a lower income tax bracket come retirement, that would make a lot more sense. So putting it towards, you know, pre-tax, so a traditional 401k or a traditional IRA, then building that bucket would make a lot more sense to pay taxes later. Because the whole idea is we want to pay the least amount of taxes over our lifetime, not necessarily, you know, in the here and now.
Right. So there's a little bit of forecasting that goes into that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes the questions I wind up like asking people are, especially if they're early on in their careers, it's, you know, do you plan on making more money in your career? Oftentimes that winds up being yes. And even if tax rates are exactly the same, will you be in a higher tax bracket, generally speaking, if you wind up making more money? Yes. Now, the thought process would then beyond that would be, do you think the tax brackets as they are today, do you think they're going to be going up or going down?
Right, exactly. Going up.
Probably, you know, there's some situation, maybe they're going to be going up, you know, if I'm a betting man, betting, right? Man,
yeah.
And so it's just a matter of looking at things logically and just saying, do I want all of my money in that tax deferred bucket, or do I need to figure out how to get some of that money into that tax free bucket? Right.
Absolutely.
Because it's not, what you're not trying to guess is like, is it going up or going down, but it's that tax calculation that you're doing. And it may be, whether it be 10 years in the future, or if it's 20 years in the future, you don't know what that tax calculation is going to look like. Because if everything is like just maintains the same at 24%, well, you could put it in a tax-free bucket and a tax-deferred bucket, and it's going to look exactly the same. It's just going to be whether or not it's going to be 32 or if it's going to be 15.
Right, exactly. The only thing that we know for sure is if, you know, Congress doesn't do anything, tax laws are set to sunset in 2026. And that 24% tax bracket or 22% tax bracket that some people are accustomed to, you're not going to be seeing anymore.
Right, right. So talk to me a little bit about, I mean, if we are preparing for, and not just 2026, but, you know, at some point in time, and they've kind of stretched us out a little bit, but at some point we're going to have some required minimum distributions, right? So they're going to make us take money out of that tax deferred bucket because it's been sitting in there growing tax deferred this whole time. So tell me a little bit about that and just some strategies around that.
Yeah. So one of the ways to make sure that come in the future, if you want to be in a lower marginal tax bracket, so it doesn't affect your monthly Medicare premiums or your Social Security as much, the key to this strategy is really lowering your required minimum distributions. And the way that you can achieve that is, obviously, if you have money in a Roth IRA, there are no required minimum distributions when it comes to Roth IRAs, right? So if everything is in Roth, you don't have to worry about a required minimum distribution. Plus, when you take things out of a Roth IRA or a Roth account, any of those distributions are not counted towards ordinary income. So that will not cause your Social Security benefits to be taxable.
So the provisional income doesn't come into play there.
Right. No, it does not. Not when it comes to Roth. And then same thing with any distributions that come out of a Roth IRA won't increase your Medicare income-related monthly adjustment amount, the IRMA that we talk about. So it's really big to have money in Roth. And then the other aspect that you could even contribute to over your lifetime is having money in an HSA. Because if it is in an HSA and you have distributions coming that for qualified medical expenses, that won't affect your Social Security or your provisional income and any of those distributions. And it will not count as ordinary income. So it will not affect your IRMA or Medicare going forward. So that's another place that you can actually contribute to and use to help, you know, tax diversification strategies and keeping money in that tax-free bucket.
Okay. So sometimes there's this hiccup, you know, at the death of a first spouse. When it comes to just kind of that, the unintended consequences, once again, of, you know, having a large deferred pot of money, and you kind of have that window of time to take advantage of some certain things. So tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So a lot of times people don't understand that at the death of a first spouse, it's can be a huge consequence later on down the line, right? So one of the things that immediately happens is out of the two Social Security payments that you as a married couple have been accustomed to, the smallest of the Social Security payment drops off.
You get the bigger of the two.
Yeah. So the widow does take on the higher Social Security payment, just obviously to help out with regular expenses. And obviously you would want the higher Social Security payout. But the year after death, now that widow is facing single filing tax brackets, right? Which are a lot lower than what they were accustomed to when they were married filing joint. And then also they moved to the lower standard deduction, right? So if you've built up this huge tax deferred asset, right? Your RMDs aren't going to change for you, right? That spouse is going to acquire the, you know, IRA or 401k for themselves as if it was their own, right? And if they're required to take those minimum distributions, it's going to stay the same. So if you have a very high required minimum distribution plus the higher Social Security payout, in the long run, that spouse with the lower file, you know, tax brackets and the lower standard deduction, they're going to be put in they're going to be paying a lot more in taxes, and they're also going to be potentially facing a much higher IRMA threshold, right? So depending on what your income limit or income is coming in, remember what we said, you know, going from married filing jointly at $194,000 for IRMA Medicare premiums, right? That is a lot different when you're single.
So I guess the moral of the story is, at the death of that first spouse, you could have that because of the RMDs and the Social Security, you could be having the same or similar-ish income, but be thrust into maybe like double the tax bracket, just simply because that's the way it works.
Yeah, double the tax bracket. And then if, you know, let's just say you were making under $194,000 married filing jointly, you would have experienced Medicare premiums for Part B at, you know, $164 for 2023, right? But then if, you know, a year out from after the first spouse dies, if you're single and facing $194,000 as your MAGI, now you're up to paying $527 a month versus
that's pretty big jump.
Yeah, pretty big.
Yeah.
So it's just something to be aware about because people don't necessarily take that into account as to, you know, they've done nothing to prepare, and that's going to significantly jump their overall taxes when it comes to federal taxes, and same when it comes to Medicare premiums.
So Crystal, if that's kind of the situation for, you know, if a spouse dies and you do have that potential increase in the income and the taxes and so on and so forth, what are some things that we could do to plan around that?
Yeah. So a couple things that you can do prior to, you know, while you're married, right? You can do partial Roth conversions. Let's say if going into retirement, and you're trying to prepare for retirement before you have to start taking Medicare, so that way your, you know, IRMA threshold is lower. You can do partial Roth conversions over time, maybe up to the 24% tax bracket, right? Keeping everything fairly low and just starting to build that tax-free bucket. If you're over the 24% tax bracket, it really doesn't make a lot of sense because most likely in retirement, you will probably be at a lower tax bracket. So even having a higher RMD, it might not affect your Medicare premiums going forward. So just really talk with a financial advisor as to how much you should do for a Roth conversion if you're looking to do this type of strategy. And then if you are about to start taking Medicare, then you want to make sure that you're not going above those IRMA thresholds, the tax brackets, because they use your, for Medicare premiums, they use your tax return 2 years prior. So you want to make sure that you keep your taxable income or your MAGI below that, you know, if you're married filing jointly, below $194,000 for this year. So it's not, you know, increasing your Medicare premiums over time. So just make sure that you're working with a tax advisor so that way they can help you with, or a tax advisor or a financial planner to make sure that they can help you with how much of a Roth conversion you should do towards the end of the year.
Yeah. And there, I mean, certainly there are situations where it's maybe it's going to be tough and you can't necessarily keep your income below that threshold, but it just be aware of like, that's what your Medicare premiums are going to be looking like because of your income, you know, and whether or not it's going to be a big change. Maybe you wind up going from like a large income to a small income when you wind up retiring. And maybe that's something that you can work through with Medicare too, to just, you know, file a petition to just say like, I just retired. So that's a big thing. My income just went from X down to zero, you know, as far as my earned income is concerned. So Crystal, I guess if you are in that year that a spouse passes away, is there any sort of opportunity in that situation where, I mean, because you are dealing with the married filing jointly tax brackets at that point in time, are there some things we can do in that time period to, I guess, take advantage of what the tax situation is for you? So obviously, you're going through a lot just from an emotional standpoint, but there are at least like some tax opportunities to make sure you're taken care of so it doesn't be a wow surprise.
Exactly. So in that year that the first spouse passes, you still get to take advantage, like you said, of the married filing jointly tax bracket. So that would be a point to actually look into doing, you know, your largest Roth conversion possible that you can do. A lot of the times, usually it's up to that 24% tax bracket. So you have up until like for the 24% tax bracket for 2023 that you can go up to $364,200 in taxable income, right? So if you, depending on what your income is for that year or what you're pulling from your IRA and so forth, filling up that tax bracket and doing a Roth conversion in the year that the first spouse passes is going to be very big for somebody. So just filling that up. And, you know, even if it's above those IRMA thresholds, like you said, Aaron, you can actually petition to lower, if you know, obviously the Roth conversion forced you to be in a much higher taxable income, you can actually petition saying, no, you know, my husband passed away, so my taxes are going to look a lot different in the coming years. This was just a one-time
event. Yeah,
exactly. And so by doing that petition, a lot of the times then your Medicare premiums will be adjusted going forward. So that's one thing to really take into account and potentially do. And we actually did do that for one of our clients when her husband had passed away. It was early on in the year and she didn't require a lot when it came to, you know, income over time. They had fairly low taxable income. So we did one huge Roth conversions because later on in her retirement, we showed that her taxes were going to be a lot higher. So we actually filled it up to the 24% tax bracket and we did about a $200,000 Roth conversion for her.
Okay.
So that way she could use that in the future. Now, one thing to make note of is every time you do a Roth conversion, you know, you have to wait that 5 year period. So that is something to take into account depending on, you know, how old you are and what your life expectancy looks like. Maybe it doesn't make the most amount of sense, but yeah. If you do have a long life expectancy or you believe you will, then a lot of the times, if you know, like we know, taxes are most likely going to go up in the future, by having that pot of tax-free assets to tap into in retirement later on in life when taxes are higher, it is going to be nice to have just in general. So we did do that for a client and it is working out pretty well because her future taxes are definitely projected to be higher.
Just biting the bullet right now while you have that opportunity, I guess, right?
Absolutely.
So certainly, I mean, this is one of those things that you have to take on a situation by situation basis. You know, what's going to be important for one person may not necessarily be important for the next, right? And so I think, you know, as you wind up looking at tax diversification, that's going to be different all the way across the board, right? But certainly some great strategies for us to take into account. And if any of this winds up hitting home for you as the listener, and you want to get a little bit of information about how that might apply to you and your situation, please reach out to us. Because this is when we wind up doing financial planning, we talk about retirement income. You know, it's not just the investment management that winds up playing an important role. I would say, you know, and Crystal, I don't know if you have the same opinion, but a lot of it winds up being your distribution strategy. And how you wind up looking at things like this with the Roth conversions and so on, that and how we wind up taking the money out in retirement, that probably has almost as big or bigger of an impact on your overall retirement and the success to the retirement.
Yeah.
So let us know how we might be able to help out you in your situation. And Crystal, if they want to get a hold of you, how would they do so?
Yes. So if you wanted to get a hold of me, you can reach out to me directly by calling the office. You can call us at 858-487-3939, or you can email me at crystal.colbert, which is C-O-L-B-E-R-T, at financialsense.com. And Aaron, if they wanted to get a hold of you, how would they get in contact with you?
Sure. It's the same number at the office. It's that 858-487-3939 number, or you can reach me at aaron.wiegman, that's aaron.wiegman, at financialsense.com. Thank you very much for joining us here today. And until next time on Lifetime Planning, we'll see you then.
The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.